You're listening to Blue Collar CEO, the podcast that's all about helping you build a better, more profitable, and more sustainable home service business. Each week, we'll cover a different topic that'll help you enable your company to move forward to success. And here's your host, Ryan Reddy.
What is up, Blue Collar CEOs? It is good to be with you again. Hope you're having a great week. Thanks for tuning in for this week's podcast. I have been itching for this conversation for a little over a month now because I met our guest, I guess through a mutual acquaintance. And the first time we connected on the phone, I was just like, holy crap, this guy is sharp. He's doing excellent work with some incredible home service companies. And I pulled his arm to get him to be here with us today. So without any further ado, Eric, who are you? What do you do? Who are you with? Give us the insights of who you are.
Delighted to be here today, Ryan. And I am a ex Inc. 500 business owner, veteran of corporate America with a passion for small businesses. I've turned around a bunch. I've grown a bunch. I've owned some. And now at this phase in my life, I am all about a mission, more so than a career, a mission that I am here to help businesses reach their potential because it's a great thing for the community. It's a great thing for the owners. It's a particularly great thing for the employees. And that's really one of the criteria is that it has to be a win-win-win. I'm not here just to make decamillionaires, which I've done many, many times. I find that the multiple on that decamillionaire thing is higher if everybody involved wins. And so that's my mission. And that includes, of course, the ultimate customer.
To help people who maybe don't know you or your or even what you do, you do a lot with EOS. And actually, I said that. Maybe there's some guys and gals listening right now who have no idea what EOS is. Get us up to speed. What is that?
So my vehicle of choice in my mission is to, I've tried a number of things over the years, but when I found EOS a little, not quite 7 years ago, I quit everything else I was doing. And it was so elegant and simple in the shortest line of sight between wherever a business was and getting them what they wanted out of their business, both in the fairly near term and in the long haul, that I started EOS. So EOS, what does it stand for? Entrepreneurial Operating System. Its sweet spot is really for companies with between 10 and 300 employees and people that want to get more out of their business. They are frustrated with where they are. They've tried other things. It always helps if they've got a little scar tissue. They value their employees. They're willing to do the work it takes to get the benefits. And they're open, honest, humble, and appreciative. And they want help. If you don't want help, don't bother with this. But if you want help getting there, and as a matter of fact, I get a lot of people that have read the book Traction by Gina Wickman, and they've tried to do it themselves. And
I think I see that book behind you on the bookshelf. Is that the book that's there?
That's right.
There are a bunch of whole row of tractions.
Yeah. I buy them a case at a time. And so, you know, people that want help and they've concluded that, well, they may be good, they can get there a whole lot faster than with some help than without it, then I'm possibly a candidate for them. So, yeah, EOS is really, think of it as a way to get more of what you want out of your business quicker than any other way that I know of that's out there. It's more simple. And really, if you've got the heart for it and the will, you can do it.
And I'm fairly new to the EOS world. I've had, gosh, over the past couple of years, lots of people say, hey, you should read this, you should read that, right? It's Rocket Fuel and Traction and whatnot. And I'm always like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like when I hear something is popular and trendy, I tend to kind of discount it, you know, like,
right.
Yeah, I don't want whatever else is doing. No, thanks. But I finally started maybe 6 months ago, started reading Traction and was like, holy crap, this is reading my mail. When you say things like, hey, a business owner has to want it, and you even like it when they have some scars. I mean, as a business owner myself, I think I know what you're saying, but in your experience, what do you mean when you say those things?
Well, typically people, the scar tissue comes about when they put in the work, they're frustrated and they can't seem to break through a ceiling. And there are really five reasons that people hit it, run into the ceiling and or go out of business. And you run into the ceiling means, and it can be on three different levels, as an individual, as a aspect of your business or the entire business, but it stopped growing. Revenue is flat. Profits are flat. Profits are flat even if revenue is growing. You have a rotating door in terms of employees. You don't have a stable business force, so it's always somebody new. You're not getting good customer reviews. You know, however, whatever's stalling you out, that's kind of the scar tissue that we're talking about. And EOS really just addresses six things, but those six things deliver three things, which are vision, traction, and health, organizational health. And we start and only work with the senior leadership team, the person that typically owns the business, the person that runs it day to day. Sometimes those are the same, the person in charge of sales, marketing, operations, and finance. And we get them to where they're clear on the vision. They are making traction every day, every week, every month, every quarter against that vision. And they're doing so in a healthy, cohesive, functional way. And then as goes that leadership team, so goes the rest of the organization in time, to where pretty soon we've got everybody in the firm clear on the vision, the greater good, where we want to go. They're making traction every day, every week, every month, every quarter, and they're doing so in a healthy way. Pretty soon, that entrepreneur can go on a vacation for 3 or 4 weeks, come back, and things are as good or better than when they left. The business operated. They weren't counted on, and they still have a huge contribution to the business. But really, the business is running itself to a substantial degree, and they can add the magic bit that they and only they can add to make it really reach its full potential.
Okay, I've got to ask, because look, what you're saying sounds awesome, right? If anyone has been running their own business for any period of time, you're kind of saying all the things that sound magical and mystical and unicorn rainbows, the whole nine yards. What do you say to the guys who go, yeah, BS, that's not true. I'm not buying it. It sounds like it's just all hyperbole. Like, surely you run into people who go, yeah, that's just all marketing spin. There's no way what you're saying is that good.
Well, so EOS does something that's really interesting, because there's more than a few of those people out there that would regard anything like what I just said, skeptically. And so what we do, first of all, is we have what we call a 90-minute meeting that has no cost to it, and get all of those leaders that I mentioned into one room or on one screen, if we're going to use Zoom, and we go over the six key components of EOS, and we tell them what's involved in what we call the proven process to get them from where they are to where they want to be. And usually when they look under the hood that way, if they're a good fit, they're in. But let's say they're in, but they still are skeptical. We also back all that up with no contract. There's typically 5 to 6 sessions a year, and you're not obligated to anything. You sign up for one session at a time. And even then, if you find that you did not get value out of one of the sessions, you don't pay for it. It's no cost. You're done typically with that implementer at that point. But there's no risk other than the time of the people that spent the day in the room with the EOS implementer. Now, I've got well over 400 sessions doing this under my belt. Nobody has ever said it wasn't worth their while. And I'm one of the most expensive EOS implementers in the world. There are people that are half the price of me, yet I oftentimes have a waiting list of people that want to get into my schedule. And that's just because I cost about what a fully loaded admin costs. And yet I pretty much guarantee that I'll produce more impact in terms of revenue and profit and growth on the business in the next year than the highest paid person in that business. And so far, nobody's ever disagreed with that assessment. So The risk is pretty low. Now, having said that, if I think you're not ready for it, I'll probably tell you that, because I don't really want to get somebody in and have them A, have a bad experience with it, and B, I want them to be in a spot where they're not wasting their time, not wasting their team's time, and they really have great success. So I probably tell people, you know, either not me or not now, 30 or 40% of the time. Because if you're hungry for getting people into your program, you got the wrong point of view. You need it to be right for everybody.
I've done my share of consulting on the outside for organizations, and I know firsthand that sometimes if the group isn't right, either they're not in the right spot, they don't have the right people yet. Sometimes things can get uncomfortable quick if you tried pushing forward when things aren't ideal. I'm curious, because you said from your previous background, before you found and stumbled into EOS, that you had other sort of frameworks and other sort of methodologies. You don't have to mention them by name, but I mean, there's tons out there. Like one of the ones that comes to my mind first is the Table Group, Patrick Lencioni's sort of approach, which is huge on organizational dynamics and also clarity, right? It would overlap in a lot of ways with the EOS framework. What problems did you see in other sort of methodologies that you practiced or experimented with that you feel like with EOS, either it's a non-factor or it's a more harmonious solution for most organizations?
Right. My previous work covered generally the six major buckets that EOS covers, but all of those things that you mentioned, plus dozens more, have one major flaw, and that is they overcomplicate everything. Your entrepreneurs are busy. There's not a lot of extra room or time, and they need to get things that they can put into action immediately. And one of the things I love best about EOS is that after the first session, there is something for that team to do the next week that will make a significant positive difference. And then every week after that, it just gets better and better. So EOS is simple. It's very clear to do. Not always easy, but it's in bite-sized chunks. And people can go as fast or slow as they can make themselves go. But they progressively get clearer on what to do. Their people get clearer. They make it simple. They make it straightforward. They make it actionable. And all of a sudden, they look up. They've been at it 6 months. And they go, oh my gosh, we've come 1,000 miles in the last 6 months. We're in a radically better place than we were 6 months ago. Now, having said that, some organizations have a dream to build a 40-story building. And they have a foundation in terms of their people, their processes, their vision, all their other things, their problem-solving skills. They have a foundation that is barely suitable for a garden shed, let alone a 40-story building. So sometimes we have to redo the foundation quite a bit so that they can grow. But, you know, in the home services, I've had people sell their business in the range of 10 to 15 times EBITDA or their net profit.
I'm sorry. Say that again. You're saying you've worked with plumbing, HVAC, home service companies who have exited with 12 to 15x multiple on the EBITDA?
Yeah, 10 to 15. Yeah. And it's pretty extraordinary. And of course,
I'm sorry. That is crazy.
Yeah. Doesn't happen all that often, but it is right now, it's particularly frothy out there. But what they're buying is they're buying a business that has lots and lots of blue sky ahead of it, meaning it can grow. And my clients typically basically eat the lunch of their competitors. They get going, their systems are strong, their delivery, their execution is strong, their processes are right. They've learned how to hire the right people that want to be there and can perform. And an investor can put their money in. Now, would I spend that multiple? Probably not. I think that's pretty rich. But, you know, one of the things that's interesting is that one party that was 10X said, you know, I need to sell. I should sell. I'm at an age where I should sell, but I'm having the most fun I've ever had running this business. Everything is working the way I always dreamed. I look forward to coming into work. I'm not exhausted Friday night. In fact, I'm not exhausted any night of the week. And I know how to handle every problem that comes down the road, and we just grow more revenue and more profit. And, you know, 22, 24 points of EBITDA isn't too bad.
Yeah, that is unreal. Oh, so I'm curious. So I don't think we actually clarified this earlier. You work primarily with home service companies. Is there any non-home service company that you would work with? Like, would you work with a pharmacy?
Oh, yeah. I work with a lot of non-home services. I work with software as a service companies. I work with medical operations, dental operations, you know, where they have multiple doctors, multiple dentists. Yeah, I work with a wide variety of people. But I
have a
particular fascination with home services because, frankly, I used to own a home service company, a big painting company, and I could see all of the problems that I can now fix. And I personally experienced those.
I guess what I'm curious, one of the things, like, we work primarily with the trades, I would say, I don't know, 80% plumbing, maybe 40% HVAC, and there's a handful of home remodel, handful of just straight up electricians, a lot of multi-trade, but that's kind of like my primary exposure. And I know a lot of those guys are, they're awesome blue collar guys. They know how to turn a wrench. You know, these guys can install a mini split in their sleep, but they don't often have like business acumen. They often don't have like traditional education, and not knocking that, right? I'm not saying like a collegiate route is for everyone, but what happens, I feel like a lot of guys struggle with like maybe the confidence to gain the aptitude to understand the business in the way that you're describing. And I would probably guess that some, even like doctors, like I would imagine some doctors are really good at their particular field of medicine, but probably struggle with business knowledge too. I'm imagining, I guess, that there's a lot of people who you start working with who lack business chops, you know, that on the outside, they're like, yeah, but they had so-and-so training, or they went to so-and-so school, or they had so-and-so experience. What sort of stories can you tell about guys who didn't have those traditional means that we would say, hey, you have what it takes to grow a company. But when you combine their willingness, their grit, their drive, their determination to do something different, plus the methodology that you work with, what sort of impact can that have?
In the software area, I occasionally get the Stanford and Harvard MBA. And if anything, that means they're going to be slower learners than my average services, because they start off thinking they know it all. And without exception, they are astonished about what they didn't learn getting an MBA or an undergraduate degree.
That's crazy.
Or whatever. So that's the first thing. I've got a new, about a $30 million HVAC plumbing electrical company that should be coming on board shortly. And one of their guys raised his hand and said, you know, I don't have a college degree. Can I do this? I said, oh, absolutely. In fact, that humble, willing to learn approach, I've got all the gap fillers to fill the gap between EOS and wherever they are and get them to where they need to be to run a business. And I provide those as part of the package. And, you know, I educate them as we go along, both in more advanced EOS subjects that are not in any book. I educate them in that. I also educate them in how to communicate with each other, because really interpersonal communications, leadership, management are really huge factors, so that they're not pissing each other off all the time with their challenges around communication. Not that they all have it, but when they have it, it's a big issue. And we just go along and I just explain what I'm talking about at the level of action. And most people overcomplicate things. I make everything simple for everybody. And that includes those overeducated people and the radically undereducated people. We just make sure that we're all talking about the same thing. And I am infinitely patient to answer questions. I've got one operator that texts me two or three times a week. And normally that goes on for 6 to 12 weeks. He's almost 2 years in, and I hear from him right along, and I answer his questions, and he is growing very rapidly.
What has maybe been one of the biggest surprises you've seen among the shops that you work with?
There are a number, but the first thing is there's a home services business today in particular, assuming they work with someone like you in their marketing to get the demand in, their biggest constraint to growing is finding the right people. We call it right people in the right seats. And so first thing is they don't have a good hiring process. And the second thing is they have a belief that there aren't people out there. There are always people out there. I think the scarcest thing on earth is a plumber. And yet, once people finally wake up and realize that they have a limiting belief about the availability of plumbers and they understand what that takes. They get the plumbers, the licensed plumbers. Like in my state, you have to have licensed plumbers, which is really a constraint. You can get the ones you need. The next thing is they don't hire people that really are a fit for their organization. So they're in for a while, they disrupt the place, and then they're gone. And we get them to where they realize that the number one problem in hiring is hiring too fast and hiring people that aren't their people, don't really belong there. They get over the illusion that as long as you've got, a plumbing license, if you're a plumber, that's really all you need. And that's really not it. You got to have somebody that lines up with your values, wants to follow your systems, is willing to, and is all about being part of a team to accomplish a goal. You've got somebody that doesn't go along with that, you're actually setting yourself back to hire them. It's an illusion.
We have a lot of guys who are kind of in, it seems like one extreme or the other with the hiring. It's either they've got too much work and not enough people to do it and they just run them out, or they feel like everyone that they hire is bad, underqualified for X, Y, or Z reasons, often without processes for training, often without processes for like culture, values, things along those lines. It is surprising how persistent those are. And not to get political, in the current climate, there's also a lot of concern about the economic influence, about how the economy is impacting companies' ability to hire or not hire. There's a lot of shops I see who don't have that problem at all. Like they create a culture that excites people to work for. They take care of their team. They take care of their employees. They have exceptional reputation, both in the trade and in the public. Those companies have waiting lists. They line up to want to work there.
Yeah, really, if you look in the mirror, it probably won't be too hard to say why you might be having a problem hiring. And you know, the hard fact is you got to fix those issues that make you not a great place to work. If you're not willing to make those changes, well, one, you probably won't hire me. But if you hired me, then and we make those changes, your ability to hire will get progressively better and better and better. And pretty soon, you'll get many of your people from your existing employees and their network. So your cost to hire will go down and they'll all be part of the community. So your turnover rate will go down and the quality of your work typically goes up if you've done everything else correct. And when you get that positive spiral going, look out. It's a great
It's really cool.
Yeah.
We like internally for us, we kind of turned that corner a couple of years ago where most of our hires come from like personal recommendations of people who work for us already. Those are fantastic people to add to the team.
Yeah.
They want to help their friends. They like going to work. They don't want to clock out. They're really, really great additions to the workforce.
Yeah, I'm great. Glad to hear you say that. Birds of a feather do flock together.
And it works in reverse too, right? Like it's easy when you got great ones, but if you have toxic people, they tend to attract the wrong kind of people. We don't have to go down that rabbit trail because it's too early in the day. So I'm curious. I mean, you're in the Pacific Northwest. You see a lot of home service companies. What is like one thing you see of these shops? Maybe they don't work with you and you don't know anyone, that every time you see it, you kind of hit your head against the wall going, why do you do this? What is that? Surely there's things that you see everywhere that just drive you batty.
Oh, yeah. Well, one of them is they don't have a process. So I used to own a bunch of rentals and, you know, I'm hiring home services all the time, and they come in, they don't have a process to set expectations about what I'm going to experience. The whole thing is wired to be right for them, not have any of my needs as the property owner or the homeowner in mind. They leave a big mess, you know, get stuff all over the floor, leave it. Now I've got a pissed off renter or a pissed off wife. Neither one of which is good, but I'd take the renter over the pissed off wife every time. They don't communicate very well. They don't give us options for how to solve the problem. They don't give us a good diagnosis on the problem. And it's hard to know whether we got a value or not. One of the big things that we find is when we follow a good process, we make it easy to buy. We give people options. You know, a lot of people come at the market thinking everybody's cheap and price oriented. The reality has been in the research for the last 80 years that only 10% of the market truly is price oriented. The other 80-90% are value oriented. And if you come in and you have a good value proposition, you execute that value proposition and you're pleasant to have in the home. You don't leave a mess. You know, tell people how it's going to go, and then you do that. They're happy to pay.
It's so funny you say this. I literally had a conversation with someone just a few hours ago. I think he is in Kentucky, and he's saying like the exact thing that you're pointing out, right? He's afraid he can't charge more. His competition is more, and he has a better reputation and half the price. And it's like, bro, you are shooting yourself in the foot. It's like you have every reason to charge more than the competition. If in fact the customers do appreciate what you're doing more than what these other guys, it's not the price. It totally is the value. And I think for me, the example I used was the steakhouse. Because like my thing is like I love a good cut of red meat, right? I have no problem going to Ruth's Chris and dropping $90-$100 for a nice steak. Can't do it all the time, but
of course
it's worth the experience, it's worth the quality, it's worth everything about it communicates premium meal from start to finish. I totally have a problem paying $100 for an Outback steak, right?
It's not worth it.
So I feel ripped off and I feel taken advantage of. If you're selling $100 Outback steak in your business, there's a problem. Yep. But if you're backing up that price with the value and the experience, customers have no problem paying that. I would absolutely agree.
Yeah. Most of my clients get a huge number of 5-star reviews on Google, a huge number. Of course, we have a process for getting those reviews typically. And so funny, we get them. Price is a leading indicator that tells people that what they're going to get is valuable. If you're cheap, then they're worried. You're getting the cheapest hot water heater available. The guy comes in, he's scruffy, he's got a beat to hell truck, he is jury rigging things in, he leaves a big mess, and you're going, when's this thing going to break down again? You didn't like having him in your home. Perhaps you couldn't be there when just your spouse was there. There's nothing good about that. And oh, by the way, there's no story to tell. It's really most of my clients get to the place where they're getting most of their business through word of mouth.
Which is great. As a marketer, that makes me nervous as crap. But that, as a business, that's a great thing, right? But it's almost like, to keep it with food metaphors, no one goes to a White Castle and expects a fantastic experience, right? Like,
right.
That's not why you go to White Castle.
Well, and particularly in your business, unfortunately, word of mouth never runs at the pace that a business wants to grow. Nobody that I know gets all their business through word of mouth alone.
Yeah. And I guess to clarify, for those who maybe don't know marketing the way I think about it, the way I think of traditional marketing and advertising, it's about generating new customers. It's customer acquisition. Right. Retaining customers is a totally extremely important KPI that's very profitable for the business, but that's separate than customer acquisition. So retention, very important, very critical to do right. But as a marketer, if we're doing SEO and if we're doing PPC and if we're doing all these things and all we're seeing is repeat business and refer business, I think everything else on the marketing side is broken. Like that can't.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
Let's do this. Let's deviate and go back. I said it was simple. Let me just share the 6 key components that make this EOS thing work.
Yeah. And let's go there.
I think that will be useful to your guys. The first thing is vision. We get clear on the vision and make sure it's shared with everybody. But getting clear on the vision, the leadership team and then the whole company all have to buy into the vision, where we are, where we're going, how we're going to get there. And that's from this quarter to this year, 3 years, and long term, whatever that is. Might be 10, might be 5, whatever. And then we get an organizational chart we call an accountability chart, which is, well, given that vision, what kind of people, what are the right people, and what are the seats in the organization that we need to have this business operate? We need certain things in marketing, certain things in sales, operations, finance. So we get clear on those, get them down. We describe the accountabilities that we want to count on those people to do to achieve that vision. And then we set up what we call the data portion, element number 3. And that's, we get clear on what the guardrails are on the road to that vision for those right people. And that's just a very simple scorecard that says, we do these things every week, we're going to make our monthly, quarterly, annual number that we said we wanted to make. And it gives us feedback. We start banging up against the guardrails. We know that we need to do a little problem solving to get back in the middle of the road. It's really that simple. There's no shame. There's no blame. And we just I teach a problem-solving process to get back on track. And there's probably not a home services problem that I haven't heard a dozen times. So, and we always get them solved. And then from there, we get those three things. We've got an open, honest, clear organization. And when we hit those guardrails, that produces an issue. It's a speed bump on the way to achieving the vision. We just call that number four, and that's issues. And we collect all the issues. And instead of today jumping on every issue that pops up, unless it's truly urgent, we collect it. And we, once a week, we have a meeting and we solve. And it's elegant. It allows us to prioritize our issues. We get to the root cause of why we have the issue instead of solving at a symptom level. And we make that problem.
So that'd be more of a, is that more of a tactical sort of meeting then? Not, you're not talking strategy. You're talking just, we need to solve this problem. It's a tactics sort of approach.
Yeah. Most people are in way too many meetings. And this meeting has everybody report on where they are against their scorecard, their 90-day objectives, you know, any headlines going on in the business, anything they said they'd do the previous week. And then we problem solve typically for an hour. We rate ourselves on how we did in the meeting, because most businesses have a lot of meetings that don't have any action items and no accountability that come out of them. Therefore, nothing happens. They're incredibly poor at execution. So we have we deal with our issues. And then the fifth thing is processes. We get the 20% of processes that drive 80% of the results at each level of the business. And we just get those down in a simple checklist format. We can build training for those. We use those processes in hiring to make sure people are willing to follow them. And then we just ask that those are the processes that everybody follows. And that delivers consistency. And oh, by the way, that's one of the secret hiding places of an awful lot of the profit that isn't being enjoyed today, because everybody does it their own way. And now we get into a process, we all follow that process. And rather than hemming people in and constraining them, the irony is it frees them to be innovative. We have a simple process that doesn't constrain their ability to be themselves and innovate. Then the final thing is the sixth one, we call that traction. And that's where every quarterly we do a pulse check on where we are. Every week we do a pulse check. We set 90-day objectives, one or two, occasionally three things that we're going to do to advance the business. And we start making that weekly, monthly, quarterly progress, because we like to say a clear, great vision without traction against that vision is a hallucination. And that's a waste of time. So we want to have that scorecard, have those rocks, have those meetings, see our problems in advance, solve them in advance, so we can grow both revenue, profit, and most importantly, organizational strength to grow without end.
You know, something you've mentioned a lot, and you kind of blow through it every time, is clarity.
Yep.
And you say it like it's simple. In my experience, that's really hard. It's really hard to like be clear, be specific, and then reinforce that clarity, because believe it or not, people forget, you know, like that clarity kind of goes away. What's your experience with creating and maintaining that clarity of focus?
Well, it's a, like any muscle that you may not have used as often, we have to build that muscle up. That's one thing. We have to have a culture of being open and honest about what's really going on, because we've got to deal with reality about why things aren't or are working. So everybody rapidly becomes more open and honest about the reality of the situation. So that's one version of clarity. You know, there's an author by the name of Brené Brown, and she says clarity is kind.
Oh, she's amazing.
Yeah, she is amazing. I am a big fan. And one of the things is that when I work with people, I'm extremely direct. I'm not an idiot about it, and I'm kind about it, but I'm very direct. And so people model my directness without being mean or being emotional. And we just get down to what the real root cause is. But, you know, clarity is people feel like they're going to get blamed or they're going to get shamed. And again, that's Brené Brown. And we just don't have any blame or shame in the EOS process. We deal with the issues. We, you know, if the people continue to cause a problem, we have a very kind process to give them a chance to recover. Or if they're just not a fit, they have a process to get out. And we have very few people have to be fired as a result of the EOS process. Most people just realize, I don't belong here. I don't really align.
And they opt out.
And they just opt out. So again, to your point, clarity is, it grows over time. And pretty soon, everybody knows the reality of what's going on. And that's one of the places where if somebody doesn't want to be clear, they want to play games with their people, they don't want to be, they want to run double standards, they don't want to be honest. I'm talking about owners and leaders. I don't work with them. They may not know how to be those things, but if they want to know how to be clear, how to be effective, how to have a great business, then I'll work with them.
I'm just going to recap because I think there's a whole lot of nuggets even wrapped into these. And obviously, if these are the six tenets or the six phases of EOS, there's a lot of heft behind each of these. You know, so having a clear, compelling vision, it all starts with like where you're going, which is different than just like, hey, we want to make a lot of money, right? Because that, in my experience, that doesn't energize people, that doesn't motivate them to get out of bed in the morning. But I like what you said about creating a team, basically essentially creating roles that hold each other accountable, right? So it doesn't sound like it's hierarchical. It sounds like it's more peer-to-peer sort of accountability. It's inward facing, not up-down facing. That having data, quantifying what the guardrails are, you can't just make up those things. It's not emotion. It's not gut. It's just, you know exactly what those things are. Which when you do all of those things, then creates a dynamic where you can bring up issues.
Absolutely.
Right? Because now you're not, like all those are backdrop that gives the issues the ability to be talked about on the table, addressed candidly on the table, and have a resolution, right? It's not just one person saying, do it this way because I said so. The group, what is it? Dell, I think, had a thing back in the 90s of, you know, even if you disagree, you contribute to the conversation and then you disagree and then commit. Like you commit to what the group decides as an outcome. Then you get into actually like identifying those processes that the 20% of the things that drive 80% of the business momentum, that the more you can get those things in place, and then that results. I mean, all those things stack up then to create that, the last thing, which is traction. And I think any of those, I feel like I could get a glass of scotch right now and talk about for quite some time, but I know your time is crazy valuable. If somebody listening right now and they have maybe two or three things that you feel like they must do or should do today, regardless if they pick up EOS, regardless if they reach out to you, wherever they are in kind of their continuum, what are two or three of those things that you say you must do this right now?
Sure. So let me go back to one thing. Those six key components of EOS, the journey is to become 80% or greater, stronger in those things on a sustainable basis. And so my clients have been around 6-7 years now, coming up on 7 years. I've been gone. I only work with people 2 years. And then I really try to get them to graduate. And they're still doing EOS without me around. Mm-hmm. They're still doing it. So that's my acid test. So if I was, you know, I would say that the things that I would recommend people do is they make everything as simple as possible. Most business owners overcomplicate everything. And that's really, the EOS tools are elegant in making things simple. The next thing is that they delegate. You can't grow if you're trying to do everything. Hire people that can take tasks off your back and get clear. We use a tool called Delegate and Elevate. Get clear on what you're best at. And even though it may initially seem difficult to do, be resourceful and give the things you're not good at or that you hate or both to other people, because you'll find it's shocking how much more you can get done when you're doing the things you're great at. So that's the first two. You know, make predictions. Stick a stake in the ground and don't just say, we'll see how we do this year. Say, I want to do $25 million or I want to do $10 million this year. Now, build the stones underneath that to hold that roof of $20 million or $10 million or whatever the number is, build under that. But if you set that context of predicting where you want to be, the next thing is get those critical few processes, you know, delight your customers and produce good results. And just be gradual. Don't try to boil the ocean. Just pick one at a time and let the place where you're having the most inconsistency or the biggest threat to your profits be the place you start. and that'll blow you away. And then kind of the final thing is build a structure so that you know who is responsible for what. Believe it or not, a lot of your employees have no idea who's in charge of what. And I have people almost every month say, you know, till I started this, I had no idea what I was really accountable for. I was really accountable for whatever the boss said they needed from me this week, and they couldn't grow. They couldn't be reliable. It was just chaos. So there you go.
It's crazy because, yeah, I said, hey, give me two or three, and you gave me five or six that were all fantastic, like little micro nuggets. There's some really good stuff there. If somebody wanted to reach out to you, Eric, if they want to learn more about you, what you do, how could they find you?
My email address is ea@ericalbertson.com. So they can do that. They can text me at 503-709-4162. But the best way is to contact my amazing right hand, a woman by the name of Jill Barrett, who is just Jill, J-I-L-L, @ericalbertson.com, because if I'm in a session, I don't pick up my phone or answer my email, and she's always available. Here's one of the things is I have home services companies around the U.S. that work with me. I work with certain people in the Portland metro market, but I have people come from Seattle to work with me, come to Portland, but I also work with them just on Zoom, and we get spectacular results. And so that's certainly a possibility. So they don't have to be in my market area. I don't travel outside of this market area anymore, but I've got very large, very sophisticated businesses and some very unsophisticated starting businesses that are strictly on Zoom, and they're all doing great. So the final thing I'll say is, you know, if I can't do it or I'm not the right guy, I will find the right person for you if you want, only if you want. I'll recommend somebody that I know, like, and trust that will do EOS and do it the right way for you.
So I just want to circle back because I'll also vouch for you on that. There's no need for geographical limitations. And frankly, in this world of post-COVID, I think more and more organizations are getting their head around what that looks like to not be geographically bound. So the work that you do, the clients don't have to go to Portland. You don't have to go to St. Louis or Spokane or wherever they are, right? Technology does a lot. In fact, it's funny I say that though, but I think, was it 2 weeks ago? I met one of the shops you work with who's just outside of Seattle.
Yeah.
Who sung your praises. It was really cool to hear firsthand, like, the impact you had that this guy attributed on his business from you. So kudos all around. So everything I've heard about you and seen from you, I'm always, always very impressed. ericalbertson.com. That's ea@ericalbertson.com or jill@ericalbertson.com. I am very grateful for your time, Eric. And actually, before we go, I want to throw a couple random rapid fire questions at you. If
Great.
You're ready.
I'm
because
ready.
I know I'm on the clock with you. You're crazy busy, but inquiring minds got to know. So we can't stop here. Okay, so now it's the important stuff. You ready? Are you a dog or a cat person?
Dog.
If you were stuck on a desert island and could have one thing, what is that thing?
A source of water.
Okay, well played, sir. What do you do for fun? What's a hobby?
I am a passionate fly fisherman, and I like to read, and I like to garden with my wife.
All of that sounds awesome.
Oh yeah, I love the Pacific Northwest is a great garden environment, and we've got great rivers. So I just took my two sons, 22 and 28, out fly fishing this past weekend, and they both got a lot of fish.
Favorite ice cream?
Chocolate.
That's boring. How do you take your coffee?
Black. And I have
yes.
Yeah, and I like what we call a shot in the dark, a little shot of espresso on my drip coffee.
Drip coffee. So do you do the nice Pacific Northwest coffees?
You bet.
You're not a Starbucks guy, are you? Okay.
No, I'm not.
Good.
No.
Thank you. What's a movie you recently watched?
Oh, boy. Well, I just finished watching on Amazon the series about Bosch, which is in and I love that. That was fun. And, you know, it's been a while since we've been in theaters, so I'm having a hard time thinking of a movie I've watched recently. But I did just read a great book called The Rose Code about breaking the German encryption in World War II. It was fascinating. Oh, So
that was actually my next question.
We'll see. I got ahead of you. The other one, though, that I just finished, and I'm a heavy reader because readers have to be leaders are readers and readers are leaders, is Execution by Larry Bossidy. And I actually fold in some of his work. Actually, I'm rereading it, I should say. It's been around, but a long time ago, I used to consult at General Electric where Larry came from. So I don't do that anymore. But
I'm curious about the GE because that's an organization that has historically had incredible leaders come through its ranks
over
the past 30, 40 years. They put something in the water there.
Yeah, they've fallen for reasons I'm not clear on. But yeah, I was very honored to be part of a developing their high potential leaders for senior management. So I would have a week with them, and it was really, these were just some great people. But I'll tell you, that's one of the places where I learned that attitude about having a growth mindset is more important than education. A lot of these guys have been super educated, but ironically, some of the least educated people did the best. And that was because of their growth mindset. They wanted to grow and they were not going to let anything, lack of education, lack of difficult circumstances, stand in their way. And, you know, really, that's where my heart is. I grew up by a father who was born in Oklahoma, Nowata, Oklahoma. And
Boomer Sooner.
Yep. Flew a B-17 in World War II and was lucky enough to survive. But he grew up in a one-room shack out in the oil fields. And he joined the service to get enough to eat. And, you know, he did not get one sink and break. And we had a very tough time growing up. And I thought, you know, if I ever make it, I'm going to turn around and help other people get up on top and have a better business life. Because my dad was a dismal business failure. He had so much PTSD from being shot up in the war. So, you know, we all have our own history and our own reason why. And that's my reason why and my commitment to these guys to help them do a great thing for themselves and their employees.
Eric, you are seriously world-class. I am extremely honored that you would carve out some time to be with us and everyone listening today. Thank you for your time. It truly was a pleasure. EricAlbertson.com. Guys, check him out. Seriously, Eric, thank you. This was a ton of fun.
Thank you. I have a huge amount of respect for you, your care and passion for this market, and the integrity with which you come at it. As you know, to do this right is not for the faint of heart. So good on you for being such a committed professional and such a great guy at this. Thank you. Thanks
for
the opportunity.
It's my pleasure. Yeah, this is fun for us. So guys, check him out. If nothing else, like just write down the things that Eric said, because everything he said is worth thinking about, meditating on, if that's your thing, reading about, because there's a lot of nuggets. EricAlbertson.com. Check out any of the EOS books. Eric, again, it was a pleasure. I'm going to give you a high five.
Back at you, man. Have a great day.
Blue Collar CEO is produced by Citizens of Sound. This episode was hosted by Ryan Redding, author of the book on digital marketing for plumbing and HVAC contractors, and founder of DP Marketing Services. This show also includes much help from Shelby Nichols. You can subscribe to Blue Collar CEO on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Visit us online at bluecollar.ceo and find us on Instagram. Also, don't forget to subscribe and leave a review.